Chapter 47 Verse 1 Then Joseph came and reported to Pharaoh, saying, My father and my brothers, with their flocks and herds and all that is theirs, have come from the land of Canaan and are now in the region of Goshen. Verse 2 And selecting a few of his brothers, he presented them to Pharaoh. Verse 3 Pharaoh said to his brothers, What is your occupation? They answered Pharaoh, We your servants are shepherds, as were also our fathers. As Joseph had instructed them, the brothers told Pharaoh the truth about their occupation, despite potential Egyptian hostility. Verse 4 We have come, they told Pharaoh, to sojourn. In using the Hebrew word lagur, translated here as to sojourn, but literally meaning to reside, Joseph's brothers identified themselves as resident strangers, resident aliens in modern parlance, residents but not citizens of the country. This is in accord with God's prophecy to Abraham, Know that your offspring will be resident strangers, gerim, in a land that is not theirs. Genesis chapter 15, verse 13. The moral power of empathy. Awareness of their ancestors' status in Egypt, first as strangers, then as slaves, left a deep imprint on the Jewish consciousness. Thus, the repeated Torah injunction to love the stranger because you were strangers in the land of Egypt, see, for example, Exodus chapter 22, verse 20, chapter 22, verse 21 in the Christian Bible, Exodus chapter 23, verse 9, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 34, and Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 19. This Torah law is predicated on the principle that empathy is a prerequisite for living morally. It is probably fair to say that universal empathy would end evil. Yet many people lack empathy, and why they do is one of the riddles of life. How can a person see another person suffer, let alone deliberately inflict suffering, and not feel empathy? Since it is impossible for people with empathy to understand people who lack empathy, one can draw only one of two conclusions. Either some people are born without the ability to empathize, or they are people who can empathize, but only with those who are like them. I think many, but not all, people in the first group can be taught some degree of empathy. As for the second group, they need to be taught that people unlike them are just as human as they are and suffer just as they do. When people regard those unlike them as less than fully human, as Jews are viewed by anti-Semites, blacks by racists, or landowners and the bourgeoisie by communists, empathy cannot exist. Verse 4 continued, In this land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, the famine being severe in the land of Canaan. Pray then, let your servants stay in the region of Goshen. Verse 5 Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, As regards your father and your brothers who have come to you. Verse 6 The land of Egypt is open before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best part of the land. Let them stay in the region of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. Pharaoh kept his promise to Joseph, Genesis chapter 45, verses 17 through 18, allowing his father and brothers to live in the best part of the land. And even asked that some of them be put in charge of the royal livestock. Verse 7 Joseph then brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob greeted Pharaoh. Verse 8 Pharaoh asked Jacob, How many are the years of your life? Verse 9 And Jacob answered Pharaoh, The years of my sojourn on earth are 130. Life is a journey to where? When Pharaoh asked Jacob about the years of his life, Jacob responded with the years of his sojourn, speaking of life as a journey. Alter observes that is indeed one of the two meanings of this response. Jacob's life has been a series of wanderings or sojournings, not a sedentary existence in one place. The other meaning, Alter writes, is human existence is by nature a sojourning, a temporary dwelling between non-being and extinction. Alter's use of the term extinction rather than death is instructive. As a secular man, Alter assumes extinction upon death is our fate. This in no way reflects on his commentary, which is both scholarly and illuminating. Moreover, it is to his credit that he wrote Extinction. Many people who believe there is no afterlife do not honestly confront the consequences of that belief. Oblivion awaits us after death. Jacob describes his life as brief and hard. He speaks for most of us. Verse 9 continued. Few and hard have been the years of my life, nor do they come up to the lifespans of my fathers during their sojourns. Jacob briefly described his life as if he were talking to a long-lost friend, not the king of Egypt. He regarded his years as having been few and difficult. The difficult part is easy to understand. From his youth, since his schism with his twin brother Esau, struggle and pain had been hallmarks of his life. And he regarded his years as few because he assumed he would soon die, and compared his 130 years to his father's 180 and his grandfather's 175. His assumption, however, was wrong. He lived to 147. Jacob was no Stoic. He tended to regard himself as a victim and let others, even Pharaoh, know it. Here is Alter's view of Jacob's summation of his life. Jacob achieved everything he aspired to achieve: the birthright, the blessing, marriage with his beloved Rachel, progeny, and wealth. But one measure of the profound moral realism of the story is that although he gets everything he wanted, it is not in the way he would have wanted, and the consequence is far more pain than contentment. From his clashing, Genesis chapter 25, verse 22, with his twin in the womb, everything has been a struggle. He displaces Esau, but only at the price of fear and lingering guilt and long exile. He gets Rachel, but only by having Leah imposed on him, with all the domestic strife that entails, and he loses Rachel early in childbirth. He is given a new name by his divine adversary, but comes away with a permanent wound. He gets the full solar year number of 12 sons, but there is enmity among them, for which he bears some responsibility. And he spends 22 years continually grieving over his favorite son, who he believes is dead. This is, in sum, a story with a happy ending that withholds any simple feeling of happiness at the end. In other words, given Jacob's response to Pharaoh, it would appear he did not subscribe to the well-known saying, "All's well that ends well." The truth is, much of humanity could sum up their lives the way Jacob did: too few years and hard. Such is life. Jacob was real. The Torah is real. Verse 10. Then Jacob bade Pharaoh farewell and left Pharaoh's presence. Verse 11. So Joseph settled his father and his brothers, giving them holdings in the choicest part of the land of Egypt, in the region of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Verse 12. Joseph sustained his father and his brothers and all his father's household with bread, down to the little ones. Verse 13. Now there was no bread in all the world, for the famine was very severe. Both the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. Verse 14. Joseph gathered in all the money that was to be found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan as payment for the rations that were being procured, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's palace. Verse 15. And when the money gave out in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, Give us bread, lest we die before your very eyes, for the money is gone. Verse 16, And Joseph said, Bring your livestock, and I will sell to you against your livestock if the money is gone. Verse 17, So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses, for the stocks of sheep and cattle, and the asses. Thus he provided them with bread that year in exchange for all their livestock. Verse 18, And when that year was ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, We cannot hide from my lord that, with all the money and animal stocks consigned to my lord, nothing is left at my lord's disposal save our persons and our farmland. Verse 9. Let us not perish before your eyes, both we and our land. Take us and our land in exchange for bread, and we with our land will be serfs to Pharaoh. Provide the seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not become a waste. Verse 20. So Joseph gained possession of all the farmland of Egypt for Pharaoh, every Egyptian having sold his field because the famine was too much for them. Thus the land passed over to Pharaoh. Verse 21, And he removed the population town by town from one end of Egypt's border to the other. This verse is not easy to understand. The Hebrew may mean town by town or city by city, as translated here. It actually states the population was moved to towns or cities. But the Hebrew is not the problem. Joseph's policy may be. Why did he move whole populations? Perhaps it was to more effectively distribute seed. Alternately, and more darkly, it could have been done to ensure they understood the land no longer belonged to them. But despite Joseph's intent to feed the Egyptian people during a prolonged famine, his economic policies, described here and in the remainder of the chapter, transformed Egypt into a feudal state. The Egyptian people gave up their freedom and became serfs of the state. Whether or not Egypt became a totalitarian state, what is known for certain is that all modern totalitarian states have been created with the promise that the people would be better fed, and better clothed, and better educated, and given better medical care. But it doesn't work. People who forfeit liberty for food end up both unfree and poorly fed. Verse 22. Only the land of the priests he did not take over, for the priests had an allotment from Pharaoh, and they lived off the allotment which Pharaoh had made to them. Therefore they did not sell their land. Verse 23, Then Joseph said to the people, Whereas I have this day acquired you and your land for Pharaoh, here is seed for you to sow the land. Verse 24, And when harvest comes, you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh, and four-fifths shall be yours as seed for the fields, and as food for you and those in your households, and as nourishment for your children. Lior Gottlieb has a positive take on Joseph's plan. Joseph ingeniously negotiates a deal in which the people are led to feel that Pharaoh is entitled to everything, but in his compassion is going to take only 20%, and they will remain with 80% as a form of salary for their work on what is now Pharaoh's land. Verse 25, And they said, You have saved our lives. We are grateful to my lord, and we shall be serfs to Pharaoh. Verse 26, And Joseph made it into a land law in Egypt, which is still valid, that the fifth should be Pharaoh's. Only the land of the priests did not become Pharaoh's. Verse 27, Thus Israel settled in the country of Egypt, in the region of Goshen. They acquired holdings in it, and were fertile, and increased greatly. Lifespans in Genesis mean much more than the number of years lived. Verse 28. Jacob lived 17 years in the land of Egypt, so that the span of Jacob's life came to 147 years. As explained in this commentary on a number of occasions, though not readily discernible to readers, lifespans in Genesis often have a significance beyond their literal number. The lifespans of the three patriarchs provide another such example. Abraham lived to 175, which is 5 squared times 7. Jacob lived to 180, which is 6 squared times 5. Jacob lived to 147, which is 7 squared times 3. In this series, the squared number, 5, then 6, then 7, increases by 1 in each case, while the coefficient, 7, then 5, then 3, decreases by 2 in each case. And the sum of the factors is the same in each case, 17. 5 plus 5 plus 7, 6 plus 6 plus 5, 7 plus 7 plus 3. These pattern lifespans exist to suggest a divine element to the lifespans of the patriarchs. Verse 29. And when the time approached for Israel to die, he summoned his son Joseph and said to him, "Do me this favor, place your hand under my thigh." The placing of one's hand under the thigh of another when making a contract is explained in Genesis chapter 24, verse 2. Verse 29 continued, "As a pledge of your steadfast loyalty, please do not bury me in Egypt." Verse 30, "When I lie down with my fathers, take me up from Egypt and bury me in their burial place." He replied, "I will do as you have spoken." Verse 31, "And he said, 'Swear to me.' And he swore to him." Then Israel bowed at the head of the bed.